Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. This is, of course, the Sisterhood Exchange radio show, which is the home of the book club for the next few weeks as we go chapter by chapter in the paperback version of the Sisterhood Exchange book. I am your very grateful host, Michelle Hollinger, and gratitude is our topic tonight. So being grateful is definitely par for the course, right? I am always grateful, and I thank you guys from the bottom of my heart for spending this part of your Wednesday night with me as we discuss the oh-so-important topic of sisterhood and just how it impacts our lives individually and collectively as women and what we can do to make it into what we want it to be, because sisterhood is very flexible. Sisterhood responds to what we put into it, and whatever our intention is for sisterhood is what sisterhood shows up as in our life. So welcome. Welcome again to the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. And I want to give you the number right away so that if you want to call in and get in on this gratitude discussion tonight, you can. The number is 646-595-2081. And once you're on the call, if you press 1, I'll get an indication and I'll bring you on. The other thing I like to invite you to do, if you're listening online on the website, there's a blue follow tab. If you would click on that follow tab, that would make you a follower of the show, and you'll get notifications whenever the show is scheduled to come on. And then if I ever have to make any changes to the show, then you'll also get notification by being a follower of the show. So if you would click on that blue follow tab, that would help me tremendously. The other thing, the Facebook page. If you guys are on Facebook, I invite you to click on the like button for the Sisterhood Exchange Facebook page, because it's just a really good way for me to reinforce what's in the book, what we discuss about on the radio show. All of it just really goes together. I post really positive, uplifting, sometimes challenging information on the Facebook page. And what else? Oh, the book. If you don't already have the book and you'd like to read it and follow along with this discussion, then it's available on Amazon in an ebook format that costs $4.99, and then there's also the paperback, which is up to $12. I think it must be selling pretty well because it fluctuates with the sales. So yeah, $4.99 for the ebook and $12 on Amazon for the paperback. And then if you're interested in getting your paperback autographed, you can order that from my website, and that's only $10 on my website. So the other thing that I want to remind you guys of is, I don't remember what it was. It's going to come back to me. It really is. So yeah, we're going to get into the discussion tonight on gratitude. This is one of my favorite chapters. This is a chapter that, you know, I tell you guys all the time that this book poured through me and I took dictation. This is one of those chapters where, you know, this is not a chapter that's in the hardback. This is a chapter that's new to the paperback. And this one just kind of poured through me. It's really short, but it's really, really powerful. Before I actually get to that chapter, I want to do a brief recap. I like to do a recap every week just in case there's some new people joining and they'll have a foundation for where we started and how we got to this particular chapter. So I've mentioned to you guys that, you know, yes, the book is in hardback version, which was published probably a year and a half ago, and that's a very awesome book. Really wonderful book. The people who purchased that book read it and went back and purchased more for their friends and their family and said that it's a wonderful book. And I agree, because God poured that through me too. But then when it was time to write the paperback, and, you know, typically the paperback has the same content but different packaging, this content is entirely different. It's set up into two parts. Part one is the sisterhood of self. Part two is sister to sister. And the premise behind that is the way that we interact with other women, sister to sister, begins with how we interact with ourselves, with the sisterhood of self. The way that I talk to myself, the way that I think, you know, about myself, the thoughts that I think to myself about my life, the way that I move in the world, all of that not only determines my own quality of life, my own level of peace, my own level of joy, my own level of prosperity and success, it not only determines that, it also determines how I interact with other women. And so when it came time to write the paperback, that's how it unfolded. It unfolded very, very clearly to me. It was during meditation, and it just became really, really clear that, whoa, okay, all of this information that has poured through for the paperback, it really needs to be separated into two parts. And so that's what happened. That's what happened with this book. And so the last few episodes of this book club, we have gone through the introduction, actually the preface that really just talks about, you know, whether sisterhood, it talks about sisterhood, first of all. It talks about how we're born as women, we're born as members of this sisterhood club, right? And then how we behave in the sisterhood club as we grow up is determined by what we were exposed to, who we were exposed to, and what their ideas about sisterhood was, right? So yeah, the preface goes into, you know, how little girls, you know, they come here really ready and willing to get along with other little girls, and then, you know, again as they grow up, whatever they're exposed to most, and depending on who the women are, because if they are women who are close to you, you know, blood relatives, people who you look up to, people who you respect, people whose opinions matter to you, then how they look at and behave with sisterhood, then that will definitely have an impact on how you look at and behave with sisterhood. So the way little girls grow up, the women that they grow up around, has a huge impact on, you know, how they start to engage with and think about sisterhood as they start to grow up and become, you know, adolescents, teenagers, young adults, and then, you know, ultimately women. So we talked about that in the preface, and we talked about how, you know, when little girls are not exposed to, you know, a different type of sisterhood, if they're not exposed to, you know, women who honor sisterhood, who, you know, support other women and speak positive words about other women who, you know, whether they know them or not. If little girls never, ever get exposed to that version of sisterhood and they only grow up with this limited view of sisterhood, then it perpetuates this vicious cycle where, you know, the perception that women can't get along, the perception that women can't trust each other, the perception that, you know, women are catty and backstabbing, those are all perceptions that continue to get perpetuated by women who are operating from their false sense of self. And a woman who has not tapped into her inner splendor, who has not tapped into who she really is inside, she's really connected to what's going on externally. She's connected to, you know, everything on the outside of her. But what other people think about her, that's something that consumes her. You know, social media, TV, radio, everything that's outside of her. Women who operate from those external things, they haven't discovered how powerful they are. They haven't discovered that they are here on purpose with a purpose. They haven't discovered that, you know, spending time in the silence is a gift that they can give to themselves to discover who they really are. So those women are operating from their false sense of self. And in the preface, we talked about how when women operate from their false sense of self, they attract other women who are also operating from their false sense of self into their life. And so that vicious cycle just perpetuates itself, and it just continues. And then I also talked about how even if a woman is caught up in that type of vicious cycle, and typically when a woman is caught up into that type of vicious cycle, it's because she has not been exposed to anything else. She hasn't been exposed to a different way of seeing sisterhood, a different way of behaving with sisterhood. But essentially, if she is caught up into that type of low-energy sisterhood, it doesn't matter how long she's been involved in it, doesn't matter how she became involved in it, she can find a way out of it by tapping into her sisterhood of self. And the acronym for the sisterhood of self, again, is SOS, and I think that that's pretty cool because you guys know that SOS is typically, you know, associated with a sense of urgency. And, you know, when it came through in meditation, and I, you know, SOS, what's up with that? You know, then sisterhood of self, and I'm like, you know what? A woman going within and discovering just how truly powerful she is, how awesome she is, starting to recognize, you know, that the more she goes into the silence, the more she listens to her own thoughts, the more she will be clearly directed to what she is here to do, there should be a sense of urgency about that. So the SOS is very, very, that acronym is perfect for this discussion and for the sisterhood of self. So in the preface, we talked about that. Then we talked about how all women have an SOS, and it's either active or inactive. And, of course, if it's inactive, then, you know, a woman is operating from her false sense of self, the sense of really not knowing who she is. And so these are the women that you see on the reality shows who have no problem with cursing at other women, who have no problem with getting into fist fights with other women, who have no problem, you know, backstabbing, being catty, et cetera, et cetera. They are operating from a false sense of self. They don't know who they really are. And they think that that behavior is effective and that is appropriate and that is normal. They think that that behavior is normal, right? So one of the other things we talked about in the preface was that, you know, if a woman does have an inactive SOS, that there's some things that she can do to activate her SOS. There are definitely some things that she can do to activate her SOS. And then we got into what the seven principles of the sisterhood of self are. And they are powerful. The first one says that every woman has an SOS, excuse me, that is either active or inactive. Your SOS is that part of you, that innate goodness, that innate feminine energy that nurtures all of us. It's right, it's inside of us, and it's just sitting there waiting for us. And a lot of us have already tapped into it. A lot of us have already activated it. A lot of you have already, you know, discovered just how sweet it is, just how awesome and powerful it is, and you spend time with it on a regular basis. So the SOS is either active or inactive. Okay. The second principle says that the SOS is activated by spending time in the silence, daily, all the time, a lot. Right? Finding some time either in the morning or in the evening or both, but making some time every single day, carving out time every single day for you to spend time with your awesome self, to listen to your powerful thoughts, to listen to your thoughts, period. Because if you have thoughts that are going through your mind that are not of the variety that you would like them to be, the only way to isolate them and to apply the energy and the intention that you need to change those thoughts is to first discover that they're there. And you can't discover that they're there if you're not spending time in the silence, because if you're not spending time in the silence, then, you know, you're caught up with the social media and, you know, radio, TV, everything outside of you, other people's thoughts, et cetera, and you never really have a chance to even hear what your own thoughts are. You know, even if you're not engaging in meditation or, you know, other spiritual practices that belong in the silence, that are a part of the silence, even if it's just a matter of just sitting with yourself and, you know, paying attention to your thoughts, even if it's that simple. And I always encourage people, you know, when you're spending time in the silence, do what works for you. No two people will spend time in the silence exactly the same way. Do what works for you. If it's a walk around your neighborhood, you know, just in the silence, just paying attention to, you know, to the birds and the nature in your community. If it's sitting, you know, in a special place in your house where you get to have some silent time for yourself, perhaps you wake up a little bit earlier than everybody else and you get that quiet time for yourself. If it's right before you go to sleep at night, whatever the case may be, you deserve to have this quiet time to yourself every single day. Every day. And start out with a small little chunk, you know, maybe 5 minutes, and then if you, you know, feel comfortable expanding it, expand it to more, and keep expanding it until it's, you know, as long as you want it to be, as long as you can, you know, fit into your life, and, you know, just allowing yourself to just have that sacred time with yourself, okay? So the third principle of this in the seven principles is that self-forgiveness elevates an active SOS. I'm breathing, y'all. Okay, so when I talked about spending time in the silence, one of the things that happens when you spend time in the silence is that all of this wonderful, you know, juicy information about who you are, you know, stuff that you may not already know about yourself, some of the stuff that you already know about yourself, but there's some hidden secrets about yourself, some hidden treasure that will float to the surface, right? There will also be some that voice in your mind that, you know, is going to start try to question you, try to discourage you from doing this because its job is to keep you in the status quo, right? And so one of the things that will become increasingly important for you as you start to spend time in the silence is the ability to forgive yourself for past mistakes, poor judgment, whatever the case may be from your past. Because in order for us to move forward with doing anything that has our name on it, if we've tried to move forward in the past and we haven't been able to because of whatever reason, more often than not, there's some self-sabotage going on. And so it's extremely important for us to get into a position of being able to forgive ourselves for anything from our past that may be keeping us stuck. And that's where that self-forgiveness comes from. And the more you spend time in the silence, the more you start to build this compassion for yourself because you start to understand that when we know better, we do better. And the topic that we did last week was a powerful one because that topic, that particular chapter is if we knew then what we know now, and we talked about how ludicrous it is for us to even keep saying that because that's an impossibility. We could not have known back then what we know now. I mean, just from the most basic level of understanding that it's just impossible for us to have known back in our past what we know now. That's a part of how we evolve. We become wiser, right? Okay. So the next principle, the fourth principle, is the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. Okay. So you've gotten through the first principle. You understand that, you know, every woman has an SOS that's either active or inactive, right? And then number two says the SOS is activated by spending time in the silence daily. You owe that. You owe that to yourself. You absolutely positively owe it to yourself, right? And even if you don't get to the point where, you know, you spend that time meditating or doing something spiritual, even if, you know, you just don't even get to that point, It's still sacred, and it's still very, very divine for you just to spend time. You honor yourself when you spend time with yourself. You say to yourself, you know what? You matter. Your thoughts matter. Your ideas about who you are in this world matter. And the silence is where you get all of that wonderful information about who you really are. That's where you get it, in the silence, because it's already inside of you. Okay, so then number three is self-forgiveness elevates an active SOS. So once you've already started spending time in the silence, you're going to get this wonderful gift of the ability to forgive yourself, this dose of compassion, this ability to see that when you know better, you do better. And then number four is the effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. So once your SOS has been activated, there's work for you to do to keep it activated. You have to start paying attention to the thoughts that you think and the words that you speak because they create your life. No, I mean, there's no way around that. Our words, the thoughts that we think show up in the words that we speak. You can tell whether a person has a negative outlook on life or a positive outlook on life by the words that they speak, by what they pay attention to, by how they respond, you know, to different things that they encounter on a day-to-day basis. And once you start to, you know, zero in on activating your SOS, or if your SOS is already activated, but you want to just take it to an even deeper level, you know, paying attention to your thoughts and to your words takes it to that deeper level. Because when you really understand that, you know, that the words that you speak every single day, they are like boomerangs. They go out into the world, and I don't mean to sound all airy-fairy, but essentially that's what happens. They go out into the world, and they bring back the people and the experiences that your words describe. So if you're constantly speaking, you know, negativity, if you're constantly complaining, if you're constantly, you know, focused on what you don't have as opposed to what you do have, you constantly bring those kinds of experiences into your life by the power of your words. And your words, again, go back to the power of your thoughts. I mentioned a few months ago on one of the shows just how many thoughts we think. That the average human being thinks up to 60,000 thoughts every single day, up to 60,000. That's a lot of thoughts, whole lot of thoughts. And because we are so often not even, you know, aware, not even paying attention to the thoughts that are running through our minds, that's why so many thoughts can run through our minds. That's why so many can run through our minds. And then the literature says that of those up to 60,000, not everybody, of course, thinks that many thoughts, but the literature says that up to of those up to 60,000 thoughts, 98% of them are the same thoughts day in and day out. They are repetitive. We're creatures of habit. And so our thoughts day in and day out are pretty much the same. And then the literature also says that 80% of those thoughts are negative thoughts. 80% of the up to 60,000 thoughts every day, 80% of them are negative. So it behooves us to just, you know, stop. One of the activities that I suggested to the listeners a few months ago on the show was to set your wristwatch or set your smartphone so that the alarm on it goes off every hour. And just to do this as a little experiment. So like maybe for a few days, maybe just for one day, set the alarm on your phone or your watch so it goes off every hour. And then when it does go off, just pay attention. What was I thinking? What was that last thought that went through my mind when this alarm went off? And just get into the habit. Just get into the habit of what you are thinking about. You know, when you get into the car and, there's cars all over the place, the traffic is horrendous, what kind of thoughts are you thinking? What kind of thoughts do you automatically start to think about, you know, this traffic that you're stuck in? Never mind that, you know, if that's the same route that you come home in every day, you already know that traffic is going to be there. There's a way to shift your thoughts. When you encounter those kinds of situations like that, you know, normally anticipate and that normally stress you out, there's a way to pay attention to what you're thinking and to shift it so that this thing that you expect to happen every single day, now it can become something that is not necessarily more positive, but your reaction to it can be positive. Because we don't have control over, you know, all of the things that happen in our lives on a day-to-day basis, but we certainly have control over how we respond to them. So that's essentially what that goes into. The effective use of thoughts and words sustains an active SOS. And then the next one, an active SOS thrives in gratitude. And we're going to go into that when we go into the chapter for tonight, the gratitude groove. But, yeah, an active SOS thrives in gratitude. Gratitude is way more powerful, far more effective than people realize, you know. Far more effective, and I'm going to wait until I get to that chapter before I go into gratitude because it's amazing. It's really amazing. So the next principle is an active SOS provides access to inner splendor, which reveals life purpose. When you spend time in the silence on the regular basis, who you really are and what you are really here to do, if it hasn't already revealed itself to you, it will. If it has not already shown up in your life, when you spend time in the silence, it will make itself so visible to you. Eventually, it will make itself visible to you. And then the other thing that it does is it kind of serves as a piece of a puzzle, right? And it helps you to see that your life has given you clues about what that thing is that has your name on it. Your life has given you clues about what your purpose is, what your passion is. And some of us may have put that purpose and that passion on the back burner because it wasn't something that was readily accepted by the people in our lives. by all the other voices in our lives. You know, they may have poo-pooed that dream that had our name on it, or they may have discouraged you because, you know, it's not considered, you know, legitimate or real or whatever the case may be. But when you spend time in the silence with yourself, your truth reveals itself. And the more you do it, there are other things that come along with it because, you know, if that thing that has your name on it is something that scares you, and that's a sign that it's something that you're supposed to do. Because if it's something that's easy, you know, I'm not real sure. So anyway, but if it's something that scares you, that's a sign that it's something that you're supposed to do. But what comes along with it, once you make the decision that, you know what, okay, I see these clues. I understand now why I'm always so drawn to this particular activity, why I can lose track of time, you know, while I'm engaged in whatever this particular activity is, whether it's painting or singing or gardening or spending time with children, whatever the case may be. It comes with courage. It comes with courage. Once you say yes to it, it's like your inner courage is like, oh, my goodness, there she is. I've been waiting for her to show up. Let me step up here with her so we can make this thing do what it do. It comes fully clothed. It comes ready for you to express it. But you have to discover it, and you discover it by going within. That's the only way for you to discover it. You may get clues, you know, in your external world, because you may meet somebody and they may start to talk about a particular thing, you know, and that may be something that resonates with something inside of you. And that's an indication, you know, that there's that thing inside of you that's longing, that is screaming out for you to pay attention to it. Okay? Whew, I am just on the principles, y'all. I love talking about this stuff. Oh, my goodness gracious, a lot. Let me give the number again just in case somebody wants to call in with a question, a comment, or a brilliant insight. The number is 646-595-2081. Press 1 if you want to ask a question or make a comment on the air. The last principle of the seven principles says the quality of a woman's SOS determines the quality of all her other sisterhood exchanges. And that's essentially what the book, you know, boils down to. The sisterhood exchange is comprised of part one, the sisterhood of self, how I treat myself, the thoughts that I think about myself, how seriously I take my own goals and dreams, you know, how I treat myself, whether I engage in self-care or not, whether I, you know, spend time in the silence, whether I am nurturing who I am, whether, you know, all of that goes along with having an active SOS, right? And then once your SOS is activated, or if it's already activated and you just, you know, deepen its power, then the way that you treat other women, that's just like icing on the cake. You don't even have to think about it, because once your SOS is activated, it's almost like you expect other women to have their SOS activated too. You're not threatened by anybody else who has an active SOS. And you can spot a woman with an active SOS a mile away when your own is activated. So will other women excel, when other women succeed, you celebrate it. You feel genuinely happy that they are doing well. That's a clue that your SOS is activated. Okay, so then we went into a deeper explanation of what the sisterhood of self is, and I talked about how it has a lot of similarities to faith. You know, faith is not a religious quality, it's a spiritual quality, and there's a misconception that only some people have faith. Everybody's born with faith. It's an innate spiritual gift. It's an innate spiritual quality that we all have. But it will remain dormant within us unless we activate it. You've heard the quote, faith without practice is dead. So it's there, but if we don't practice it, then it can't do what it's designed to do. It can't help us to achieve anything because it's just lying there. Well, your SOS is the same way. We all have the SOS, but it takes intention. It takes a little tiny bit of intention to wake it up. And then, you know, of course, once you wake it up, you know, it takes some consistent nurturing, some consistent attention and intention to not only sustain it but to strengthen it, to allow it to continue to grow and let it do what it's designed to do, which is to help you to live the life that you're here to live. That's ultimately what your SOS is all about, helping you to live the life that you are here to live. you know, again, that dash that's in between the date of our birth and the date of our death, that the dash is the thing that we have control over. And an active SOS means that that dash is full and is rich and it's yours. It's uniquely yours. It has your name on it. You know, at the end of the day, you can look at that dash and say, yeah, I did it. I did that. I lived the life that I was here to live. Okay? So, oh, let me breathe. So in the chapter on the sisterhood of self, you know, I talked about, you know, what women who do have an active SOS, what their characteristics are. All right, and I said that these women are authentically successful women whose thoughts, words, and actions illustrate that they live from an active SOS. They are women who believe in themselves, value and respect themselves, women whose self-talk is non-judgmental and supportive, women who forgive themselves for poor judgment and mistakes, women who are either living or actively pursuing their life purpose. They are women who routinely poke holes into their shrinking comfort zone by constantly stepping on it on their way out of it. So these women are taking risks. They don't always succeed when they take a risk. Sometimes, you know, it doesn't turn out the way that they want it to. But a woman with an active SOS will take what somebody else calls a failure and see it as a lesson. And she'll see it as something that she can learn from and use when she takes the next risk. Okay? So let me see what else. These women's thoughts are predominantly positive. They celebrate life. They question authority. They speak affirming words and aren't easily rattled. They read books, attend seminars, and watch television shows that encourage them to become more, not less, of who they really are. And that's like one of my favorite sentences, becoming more and never less of who we are. When we don't take risks, when we are not spending time in the silence, when we are not poking holes in that comfort zone, that quote-unquote comfort zone, because it's not really comfort, it's not really comforting or comfortable to remain in your status quo because you don't grow, you stay the same, and, you know, how exciting is that? But, yeah, when we are not doing those things, when we're not, you know, putting ourselves in different environments that pull us to grow, that pull us to really, you know, do what we're here to do, then we're really becoming less of who we are instead of becoming more. Because ultimately, the wholeness and the completeness of who each one of us is inside of us. And as we age and as we become, you know, older, our ability to tap into it and mold it and shape it becomes easier and stronger. Right? But all that comes along with taking risks. All of that comes along with doing that thing that has your name on it. All of that comes along with activating your SOS and, you know, spending time in the silence, watching what you say, you know, watching how you think. All that comes along with that. And when you are doing all of that, when you are nurturing yourself to that degree, you are definitely becoming more of who you are. You are definitely becoming more of who you are. And that's a really exciting thing, really exciting thing. And I get so excited when I see other women becoming more of who they are, you know, and when they notice it too. That's just really cool. That's really, really cool. Okay, so the next chapter that we went into was called Disconnect to Connect. And that one essentially just really talked about what, you know, some of what I've mentioned already about just how important it is to just turn off on occasion, to turn off all the external noise, turn off the TV, turn off the radio, turn off the social media, you know, just put it all down and to spend some time in the silence. And this could be in addition to the time that you carve out just to pay attention to your thoughts. You know, one of the things that this chapter talks about is how, you know, sometimes when we walk into the house, the first thing we do is turn on the TV, whether we're watching it or not. You know, when we get into our car, the first thing we do is turn on the radio, whether we're really listening to it or not. And it's because we're uncomfortable with silence. So we have to get this background noise to, you know, kind of fill in so that we don't have to, you know, spend the time in the silence and listen to what's going on inside of our head. But we're doing a disservice to ourselves when we constantly fill our space with noise. And that's what that chapter talked about, disconnecting to connect. You know, it also talked about how how as families, you know, we're allowing social media and, you know, technology to rob us of some of the precious time that we should have with each other. You know, if we're sitting around a table, a dinner table, and everybody has their cell phone out, you know, we're not really spending time together. And so, you know, one of the things, one of the gifts that we can give to our family is, okay, dinner time, phones off. In fact, put all the phones in the middle of the table. If you're out to dinner, first person whose phone, and I've heard other people say this, first person who uses their phone has to pay for the meal. You know, well, get creative. It's just really important, not only for us to disconnect so that individually we give ourselves time to nurture ourselves and to be alone with our thoughts and to discover that inner splendor, but even collectively, you know, how we spend time with our children. How we spend time with our children, are we being fully present with them? Or is it easy when they're talking to us for us to be distracted because the phone, we hear the phone chirp because we just got a text or, you know, a phone message or whatever the case may be, you know? I think that technology is wonderful, social media is awesome, all of that, but I think that, you know, that we're probably at a point where we really, really, really owe it to ourselves and to our families just to say, okay, hold up, wait a minute. At least for these 5 minutes when this little girl or this little boy or this young lady or this young man is talking to me, I'm going to give them my full attention, and this cell phone can wait, right? So, okay, so that's what that chapter was about. And then the next chapter was your thoughts, your life. And, again, I went into just how powerful your thoughts are and how your life is not what's happening in your life is not a coincidence. It's not a coincidence at all. Your thoughts had a tremendous amount to do with what is going on in your external world. The way that our subconscious minds work, our subconscious mind is neutral. It takes on the energy, the flavor, the direction of whatever our thoughts are. And if we are constantly focused on whatever is negative, then our subconscious mind says, oh, okay, this is what she likes. So let me bring more of that into her space. Let me bring more of those kinds of experiences to her because it's that free will. We have free will to create our lives into whatever we want our lives to be, right? And our subconscious mind is very dutiful. It's obedient to us. It does whatever energy of our thoughts and our words, whatever that is, our subconscious mind gets busy bringing that into our life. And so if we are of the habit of always looking at what we're grateful for, if we, you know, on a regular basis count our blessings, then guess what? Our subconscious mind is like, oh, that's what she likes. Let me bring more of those kinds of experiences. Let me be on the lookout for those kind of people because that's what's welcome in her space. That's how our subconscious minds work. And so that's what that chapter was about. And then the next chapter was listen to your inner critic and then tell her that she's been demoted. That chapter right there talked about how, you know, when you start to spend time in the silence, and even if you don't, you know, we have this inner voice, all of us, every single one of us, we have this inner voice. And a lot of people don't realize is that that voice is very, very trainable. But if we're not, you know, spending time in the silence and we don't recognize that what that voice is telling us is designed to keep us stuck, it's designed to keep us in status quo. Because the thing with your inner voice, she thinks that anything new is dangerous. She thinks that new stuff is going to cause you harm. And so her job is to keep you in the status quo. And so she shows up as this little voice that says, you know what, it's really not a convenient time for you to go back to school. Even though you yourself realize that this is the most ideal time, you'll get that little voice in your head that presents what sounds like, you know, legitimate justification for why you should not pursue this particular thing. You know, you've heard her so often that she sounds friendly, right? And so her job is to keep you from stepping outside of your comfort zone. But when you don't spend time in the silence, you are not in the habit of challenging what she's saying to you. And so that particular chapter talked about that. It talked about how, you know, once you're in the habit of spending time in the silence, and you start to recognize her voice, and you start to hold her statements up to the light, and you start to recognize that most of her words have their basis in fear. And then you get to a point where you just decide that you are not going to allow fear to run your life anymore. And it all goes back to spending time in the silence. And then, you know, being able to pay attention to what she's saying to you and being willing to challenge it. And then, you know, just get it into the habit of holding it up to the light. Okay, so you've decided you're going to go back to school, right? You've checked on the class schedule. You got all your ducks in a row, and you're about to make it happen. And then she says something like, well, you know what, you're not going to be able to, you know, pick up the kids by the time that they need to be picked up. And you know you still have to get home and cook. And if you only give into that without challenging it, without questioning what she's saying, without holding it up to the light, the solutions that are there for every single obstacle that she throws up, you will never discover. There are solutions that, because your dreams and your goals, they come fully clothed. They come with the courage. They come with the resources. They come with everything that you need. But if you don't spend time in the silence, then if you don't challenge this voice that is trying to keep you from manifesting these particular things in your life, if you don't ever challenge it and you just listen to what she says, and, you know, time and time again she's able to stop you in your tracks, then, you know, you're going to end up not pursuing what it is you're here to pursue. And this chapter just talked about, it went into detail about how, you know, you can really just start to pay attention to what she's saying, hold it up to the light, look at it objectively, and allow the solutions, you know, that can then remedy whatever it is she's trying to stop you with, those solutions can come. And then sometimes, you know, whatever she says, there may be some truth to it. But if you're not paying attention to it, if you're not, you know, just kind of stripping it down to its bare essence, if you're not looking at it for what it really is, it can derail you. It can keep you from doing, you know, what it is that you need to do. And then if there's some truth in it, take the truth from it and use that to prepare you forward. You know, take what you need and keep it moving. That chapter just talks about how, you know, there are really successful people, and we all have that inner voice, but successful people have learned how to train their voice so that it becomes an ally and not an obstacle. They train their voice. They help their inner voice to understand that, you know what, you are a part of this team, but guess who the coach is? You are not the coach. I am the coach. And this is what's going to happen, because the last time that you stopped me from doing whatever, you know, whatever the case may be, fill in the blank, you know, your advice was faulty. So, you know, you're going to don't have these conversations with your inner voice like out in public. I'm teasing. But, yeah, just start to pay attention to what that inner voice is and train her to support you by redefining her role, give her a new job description, and remind her that you are the boss, not her, right? Okay, so then the next chapter was If You Can't Say Something Nice, and that one just really talked about how important it is to, you know, just pay attention to the words that you speak and to consider, you know, whether the things that you say, you know, frequently, whether they are actually positive statements or they're disguised as positive statements, but they're really doing more harm than good. Because we as a society, we're in the habit of saying things, you know, these sayings, like if it's not one thing, it's another. And that chapter talks about it. It talks about how negative that statement really is, and really how we should eliminate it from our life. Because what that statement says is, okay, if it's not one thing, it's another. We usually say that when something negative happens, right? And then what the statement says is, if it's not one negative thing, it's another negative thing. So guess what message we just gave our subconscious mind? Bring on the negative experiences. So a statement like that really should be, you know, eliminated from our vocabulary. Then another phrase that I went into in this chapter is no problem. We have, oh my goodness, we have gotten into the habit of saying no problem all the time. Now, remember what I said about our subconscious mind. Our subconscious mind is neutral, and it literally takes what we say to it, and it starts to manifest, you know, experiences, people, et cetera, in our lives based on what we give it. And when we say a phrase like no problem, our subconscious mind only knows the familiar definitions of those words. Right, so the word no, I mean, it usually just is associated with something negative, okay? And traditionally, it means to deny something or to be against it, right? And then the word problem traditionally means trouble. There's nothing positive attached to the word problem. And then we put the two of them together, no problem, and when you consider the statement that no problem replaces, you know, when people sometimes when someone says thank you, well, oh, no problem, instead of you're welcome. You're welcome to me is like one of the most beautiful phrases that you, it's a connecting phrase. You know, in the singular, we say I am. And we know that whatever words come after I am, you know, that's powerful. And you are welcome. You are welcome to this generosity that I just demonstrated. You are welcome to, you know, whatever that positive thing was that I just did. I so wish that we could have a campaign to replace no problem and return your welcome back to its rightful place. That's just one of my secret wishes. So, yeah, that's what that that chapter talked about. And then we, the next one, oh, this chapter, this was last week. If we knew then what we know now, and that's just a counterproductive phrase because we can't, we could not have known then, whatever then is, it was in our past. We couldn't know then what we know now. That's just not how it works. You know, we evolve and we become older, and, you know, we have life lessons, and, you know, we learn from our mistakes, we learn from our successes, we learn from different experiences. And so we have in our toolbox all these lessons and, you know, this wisdom, and it may not be perfect wisdom, but it's our wisdom. We acquired it. And we didn't have that when we were back, you know, younger. And so to look back at our younger lives and to beat ourselves up because we did not do whatever, you know, we're beating ourselves up about, or we were not this kind of person that we thought we should have been, that is such a waste of time. That is such a waste of time. And I just encourage you, if you've been in the habit of doing that to yourself, to really cut yourself some slack, to really just consider cutting yourself some slack. It takes time, you know, if that's something that you've been in the habit of doing, you know, it takes intention and it takes time and it takes practice to stop it. But it's something that you really should stop because what happens is when we are constantly looking back in the past at what we didn't do or who we were not at the time, that takes energy. It takes energy that we could be devoting to the here and now. It takes energy that we could be using to pursue that dream, to, you know, to take the steps to achieve whatever particular goal that we have, to change our life. We can't change the past. We cannot change it at all. There's nothing that we can do to change the past. I used to be the biggest guilty person about that. I used to look back at my past and I used to wish that my mother hadn't died. I used to wish that, you know, different things had not happened. I wish that I used to wish that I had, you know, I was more outspoken, less shy. I used to wish all of these things, and it just occurred to me one day, you know what? All of that already happened. All of that already happened. It's done and gone. There ain't a doggone thing you could do about it. So why are you wasting your time looking back over something that you have no control over? And I made a shift. It took time. It was a process. But I made a shift, and I started to have an intention of looking at my past differently. I started looking at, you know, number one, not who I wished I wanted to be, who I wished I had been, but who was I really? Who was I really, you know? I started looking at, you know, what were the blessings in some of these things that happened? Because if each and every one of us looked at what we call our defining moments in our life, if I say to you, make a list of two or three things that have defined who you are, the person that you are today, the awesome person that you are today, make a list of a few things, your defining moments. More often than not, it's going to be something traumatic that happened to us back in the day, something that we survived, something that showed us what we are made of, right? The mother that I am today with my children had a huge reason that I am as present with them as I am is because I lost my mother when I was a little girl. So that was one of the things that I was able to look at and say, okay, well, here's one thing that impacted the kind of mother that I've become. So, you know, if we are going to look back at our past, look back to draw positive from it. Look back to discover how those things impacted you and made you who you are. Look back and ask yourself different kinds of questions instead of why me, you know, ask yourself how did that particular experience create the person that I am today? What two or three strengths that I discover about myself because of that particular experience. But essentially what that chapter talked about was how important it is for us to decide that we are no longer going to beat ourselves up about our past. It's useless. It's counterproductive. It sounds like, you know, it sounds innocent. You know, what harm could there be, you know, looking back and wondering what I could have done different? It is harmful because it diverts your energy and your attention from the here and now. And that's only the only thing that you have any control over, right? So that chapter also included a letter that I wrote my younger self, my dear 21-year-old Michelle, from 51-year-old Michelle, because if we are going to look back, you know, I've seen it on Facebook and I've seen it in magazine articles, you know, if you could write a letter to your younger self, what would it be? And typically, more often than not, it's one of those letters that says, well, you should have done this differently, or you should have done that, or I wish you had been more courageous, or I wish you had been more. And to me, that kind of letter, it should be set on fire. The kind of letter that you should write to yourself, and this is just my opinion, is a letter thanking yourself for being who you were, for doing what you did. Because chances are, if you have been in the habit of only looking back and nitpicking, you know, what you didn't do, there's like a number of things that you did do that you can't be proud of, that you just, because that hasn't been your focus, you don't give it the attention that it deserves, right? And so my opinion is that if we are going to write a letter to our younger self, it should be a letter of thanks, a letter of gratitude, and just zero in on how that person helped you to arrive at being the person that you are today. That's the kind of letter that you should write to yourself. And that particular chapter includes the letter that I wrote to myself. Whew. And so now it brings us up to tonight's chapter, which is the gratitude groove. I absolutely, positively love this chapter. It's the shortest chapter in the book, but it's so powerful. So I'm going to go ahead and read it. And if you have the book, it's on page 37, The Gratitude Groove. And it goes, making gratitude a regular part of your life is to change it. Living with an intention to embrace gratitude every chance you get broadens your perspective unpredictably. I'm going to read through the whole thing because it's so short, and then I'll go back and discuss a little bit of it. The next paragraph, gratitude is multifaceted, capable of standing alone, but an eager partner with joy, peace, and optimism. It is at the core of prosperity, attracting more of itself abundantly. Amazingly addicting, once you're fully immersed, gratitude flows involuntarily, bound to grace, impacting you and your outlook without your permission. Gratitude makes a good day great and a bad day a lesson. Gratitude melts regret, celebrates what is, and anticipates goodness. Gratitude softens the sting from tragedy, transforming its owner into an archaeologist, excavating underlying meaning. I love that statement right there. I can't wait to discuss that with you guys. Last paragraph, gratitude is an expression of love that has a mutually supportive relationship with an active SOS, flowing to and fro, blessing, healing, restoring, expanding. This chapter, this page poured through me, and it was profound. It was so deep. It was emotional, because I've been in the habit of keeping a gratitude journal for a really long time now, and gratitude really changed my life. You know, I mentioned to you guys that my mother died when I was a little girl. I had a number of tragedies in my life. My two older brothers were killed, you know, separate incidents, but they were both killed violently by gunshots. A lot of tragedy, a whole lot of tragedy in my life. And for a long time, you know, I spent a whole lot of time just looking back at it and wishing things were different and, you know, just the why me thing. And at some point in my life, I realized that, you know, I did not have any control over any of that. And I can't remember exactly when and where gratitude showed up and showed me how powerful it was. But once I embraced it, and, you know, I embraced it at a very, very deep level, very, very deep level. I keep gratitude journals, and a gratitude journal is where, you know, every day you write down at least 5 things that you're grateful for. Some days it'll be, you know, 15, 20, you know, your pen won't stop moving. And then some days it'll be a challenge to get out those 5. But keeping a gratitude journal and just inviting gratitude into my life changed me at a core level, and it's such a life-changing thing, So let me go back to the first paragraph. Making gratitude a regular part of your life is to change it. Living with an intention to embrace gratitude every chance you get broadens your perspective unpredictably. And what I mean by that, you know, by it broadening your perspective unpredictably is when you get into the habit of making gratitude a part of your life, if you start to keep a gratitude journal, you do that every day. And the thing about a gratitude journal is it causes you to be on the lookout for gratitude from the time you wake up until the end of the day when you are writing in your gratitude journal. So, you know, things that are already happening in your life, things that you're already grateful for, but you may not be paying a whole lot of attention to, you start to pay more attention to because you know that at the end of the day, you have to write down at least five things, right? But what happens is when you get into the habit of you know, focusing on gratitude, things that used to aggravate you, they don't have the same impact on you. That's what I mean by it broadens your perspective unpredictably. It's almost like, you know, you just see things differently. You understand that appearances don't tell the whole story and that there's usually something behind it that could explain it. Even if you don't know what that something is, you are just more open to that when gratitude is a part of your life. Gratitude, oh my goodness, gratitude is such a game changer. Such a game changer. And because, again, going back to how our subconscious minds operate, because our subconscious minds, again, our subconscious mind is neutral and it takes on the energy and the flavor and the direction of whatever we give to it. When we make gratitude a part of our life, and that's the message that we're giving to our subconscious mind. Our subconscious mind is on fire for attracting other things into our lives for which to be grateful. That's how it works. That's essentially how it works. Okay, so the next paragraph says, gratitude is multifaceted, capable of standing alone. And if you're new to embracing gratitude, you know, so initially it's going to feel like, you know, okay, this is my intention. I'm going to be on the lookout for things for which to be grateful, right? So, you know, it's gratitude is a solo thing. But the next part of this sentence, but an eager partner with joy, peace, and optimism. It's like when you start to focus on what you're grateful for in your life, those are the qualities that they're already there too, but they become amplified. They show up in an even bigger way, right, with gratitude. So it's at the core of prosperity, attracting more of itself abundantly. Whenever you hear people talking about, you know, the law of attraction, I can't think of the name of that song now. It's a gospel song or a gospel jazz song. I can't think of it right now, but it essentially talks about the person who focuses on what they don't have will even have that taken from them, but the person who focuses on what they have and they're grateful for that, they attract more into their lives. It's going to come to me later when I'm off the air. I'm going to be, oh, my God, that's what it was. Okay, amazingly addicting. Once you're fully immersed, gratitude flows involuntarily, bound to grace, impacting you and your outlook without your permission. It's like gratitude gets on autopilot in your life. The more you hang out with gratitude, the stronger it gets in you know, in your life, and it just you know, it gets on autopilot, and before you know it, you know, your outlook just changes. Again, you know, things that used to get on your nerves, it doesn't bother you anymore because you realize that, you know, number one, this too shall pass, and then the other thing is that, again, the appearance doesn't tell the whole story, and when you operate from a position of gratitude, you just... Your wisdom, your ability to be more tolerant, more patient, that just comes along with it. That just really comes along with it. Okay, and then the next paragraph, gratitude makes a good day great and a bad day a lesson. You become more capable of seeing the big picture, of understanding that if this particular thing did not happen the way that I wanted it to, chances are it's because something better is in line for me. It's because it wasn't meant to happen that way, right? And, you know, when that quote-unquote bad day happens, you are more likely to look at it and say, okay, so in my silent time, let me dissect this thing. Show me why this thing wasn't supposed to happen the way that I thought it would. What are some lessons that I can take away from it? What's the hidden treasure here? When you are spending time in the silence and when you have made gratitude a regular part of your day, the way you look at things will change. Guaranteed, the way you look at things will change. And if you get into the habit of using that gratitude journal, whew, goodness gracious, you better brace yourself. I'm telling you, you better brace yourself because it just anchors gratitude. When you put it in writing, it just does something. You know, your subconscious mind almost takes it even more seriously when you write it down. And then it's such a gift to yourself because, again, the gratitude journal, it puts you in a position of when you wake up, you know, and you start your day, you know that at the end of the day, you know, you're going to write in this gratitude journal. So you're on the lookout throughout the day for things for which to be grateful, you know. You start to see the humor in things. You know, things don't stress you out like they used to. And gratitude, it just becomes this incredible gift, this wonderful, wonderful gift to you, right? Next one, gratitude melts regret, celebrates what is, and anticipates goodness. Gratitude, you know, if you look at your past with the intention of discovering what you're grateful for from your past, it helps you to not regret anything. It helps you to see that everything happens for a reason. It helps you to see how each one of those situations blessed you. And please hear me when I say that. I don't mean to minimize any traumatic or painful experience. I have had my share. But I speak from experience when I say that gratitude helps you to unleash yourself from being a hostage to your past. Gratitude helps you to recognize just what a gift your life is, and it helps you to move forward in a way that nothing else can. Okay, so the next sentence says, gratitude softens the sting from tragedy, transforming its owner into an archaeologist, excavating underlying meaning. You guys can probably tell that I love words. My daughters tell me all the time, "Ma, you say a lot of words." That's the sweet way of saying, "Ma, you talking too much." But, yeah, I love words. Gratitude softens the sting from tragedy, transforming its owner into an archaeologist excavating underlying meaning. Again, the appearance doesn't tell the whole story, right? And so if we get to a point where we are capable of using that approach with other people and other experiences, the appearance doesn't tell the whole story. Think about how powerful it is when we use that approach for ourselves. When we look at our experiences from a position of gratitude and we decide, okay, I'm going to be an archaeologist here and I'm going to excavate, I'm going to dig down, I'm going to really stay with this and spend some quiet time with it and allow spirit to reveal to me what this underlying meaning is. Understanding that every single thing happens for a reason, and when we have an intention to discover what that reason is, if that reason was not readily apparent, if we have an intention to discover what it is, it will reveal itself. It will reveal itself. And when you get to a point where you are capable of using your gratitude that way, then when things happen, when less than desirable things happen in your present, and you are able, you know, you're more skilled at just immediately going to gratitude, immediately going to gratitude. Well, my sister-in-law passed away, she passed away in 1998. I was able, that thing hurt so badly, really hurt badly. I gave myself permission to feel the pain, to feel, you know, that huge loss, but it was cloaked in gratitude because one of the things that I did that helped me that day was I went and I grabbed my gratitude journal because I knew she was all through my gratitude journal. Carolyn was all in my gratitude journal. And on the day that she transitioned, I went and found the gratitude journals that you know, I had written about her in. And I just sat there and I just read all of these things that this woman gifted me with by being in my life. And so gratitude helped me to experience her transition in a whole different way. I eventually got to such a level of peace with letting her go because gratitude was just so profoundly a part of how, you know, I was able to manage her transition. And that's what it does. You know, you are able to really see beyond experiences, and you're able to give yourself permission to feel whatever it is you need to feel, and understand that on the other side of that pain, there's going to be some peace for you. But you gotta walk through it. Gratitude helps to make the walk easier and smoother. Gratitude. Whew, goodness, I'm going to get me a T-shirt with a big G on it for gratitude. And you know that G can also stand for God, because God brings gratitude with everything that God is. Okay, last paragraph. Gratitude is an expression of love that has a mutually supportive relationship with an active SOS, flowing to and fro, blessing, healing, restoring, expanding. When you are in the practice of activating, or if you've already activated or you already have an active SOS and you are in the practice of sustaining, deepening, strengthening your SOS by spending time in the silence, by, you know, practicing self-forgiveness, by immersing yourself in gratitude, your SOS and gratitude working hand in hand, that makes you unstoppable. That makes you, you know, fully capable of recognizing that inner voice, and, you know, seeing her for who she is and being able to lovingly put her in her place and say, you know what, not this time. Mm-mm. Not this time. I see this goal. This goal is right here in front of me, and I will not allow you to convince me to sabotage myself once again. Not this time, sister girl. Go sit down somewhere, right? Gratitude is powerful, people. Gratitude is extremely, extremely powerful. Okay. Whew, I need to breathe. I laugh about that. I'm breathing all the time, but I mentioned before that deep breathing is such a powerful thing. And as we discuss these really deep, important topics, deep breathing takes on an even greater importance. I wanted to share with you from another one of my favorite books. My favorite book right now, of course, is The Sisterhood Exchange. But one of my other favorites is called Something More, and is written by a woman named Sarah Bond Breckness. And she wrote a pink book called Simple Abundance. And I think that book was published back in 96. And it's one of those books that all women should have. It's timeless. It's a beautiful book. It has 365 different entries in it, you know, different entries for every day. And, you know, it just talks about returning to yourself, discovering who you are. And, you know, she gives you different activities. She's such a beautifully brilliant writer. I love her words, her use of words. So I'm going to read a little bit out of Something More, because I think it's in alignment with this whole discussion about gratitude. And what she talks about, how we confuse happiness and joy. And I just firmly believe that when you get into the habit of engaging gratitude, of living permanently from gratitude, making gratitude a daily part of your life, you are able to distinguish more easily between happiness and joy. And so she says, many of us confuse happiness and joy. She says, happiness is often triggered by external events we usually have no control over. You get the promotion, for example, he loves you back, they approve your mortgage application. Happiness, she says, camouflages a lot of fears. But she goes on, but joy is the absence of fear. Joy is your soul's knowledge that if you don't get the promotion, keep the relationship, or buy the house, it's because you weren't meant to. You're meant to have something better, something richer, something deeper, something more. Joy is where your life began with your first cry. Joy is your birthright. I think that is just so in alignment with gratitude. And you know, just the more you spend time with gratitude, joy is just like right there revealing itself. And you see the difference. You see the difference between happiness and joy. You see that, you know, living from the inside out is really, you know, a guarantee for tapping into your inner splendor and really being able to manifest the life that you want to live. That's what it boils down to, that each one of us is here on purpose with a purpose, and the more that we spend time in the silence, the more we activate and then sustain and nurture that SOS, man, we can really do some stuff, people. We can really, really, really do some stuff. So I think that I am going to wrap it up. Thank you guys so much for joining me tonight for the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. Next week, let me see which topic, which chapter we are on. Next week's chapter is, hang on one second for me there. I think it is The Need to Be. Yeah, it is. After the Gratitude Groove. No, I'm sorry. It's Decide That You're Worthy. That's another good one. Decide That You're Worthy. Yeah, that's on page 39. So we're going to do two chapters next week because these two are two very short chapters. You know what? Gratitude was a short chapter, so we're gonna plan to do Decide That You're Worthy, and then if we have time, we'll move into The Need to Be. That's another really, really good one, The Need to Be. And then that will be the end. That will be the last chapter for part one of the book, and then we're going to move into Sister to Sister, part two of the book, So Without. As Within, So Without. So if you don't already have the book, I really encourage you to get it. And, again, you can get it from Amazon.com. You can get the ebook for $4.99. When you get the ebook, it downloads immediately. If you have a Kindle, and then even if you don't have a Kindle, they have a Kindle app that you can get out of the Google Play Store, and then you can that makes it adaptable to any smartphone or any of your electronic devices. You can download the Kindle app, and then you can read that. You can read the ebook on any device. I like that a whole lot. And then Amazon also has the paperback for $12, and then if you want to have your book autographed, you can get it from my website, which is michellehollinger.com, and you can order the book from my website, and those books get autographed and sent out by yours truly. So I don't see anybody. Well, there are no callers, so I didn't want to disconnect before making sure. So, yeah, thank you guys so very, very much for tuning in, and I will be with you again next week at the same time on blogtalkradio.com/ The Sisterhood Exchange for another discussion about the Sisterhood Exchange Book Club. Thank you again very, very much. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday, and please have a fantastic week. Talk to you again next week. Peace.